The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Welcome. I'm Deborah Love for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues, bringing you information from respected sources about health matters that may be helpful for you or those you care about in consultation with your healthcare provider. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. Today's program begins with a continuation of last week's episode that was devoted to a Mayo Clinic special report on heart failure. I hope you had a chance to hear it. If not, it's available as a podcast at ncreadingservice.org. Last week, we learned that there are two categories of heart failure, one with reduced ejection fraction and one with preserved ejection fraction. We learned that that for people with reduced ejection fraction, there are four drug categories. And today we'll take a look in more depth at those advancements, as well as other advancements in healthcare. But first, let's begin with a recap of the symptoms of heart failure. You'll recall that your body's organs need oxygen-rich blood. When they don't get enough, problems develop. For example, if your kidneys don't get enough of the oxygen-rich blood they need, they may not function as well to get rid of excess fluid and salt. Fluid can back up into multiple parts of your body, such as your abdomen, ankles, and feet. Other heart failure symptoms may include shortness of breath, known as dyspnea, especially with exertion or lying down, fatigue, weakness, swelling or edema in the legs, ankles, and feet, regular or irregular heartbeat, reduced ability to exercise, persistent cough or wheezing, production of white or pink blood-tinged phlegm or mucus when coughing, sudden severe shortness of breath and coughing up pink foamy mucus, rapid weight gain from fluid retention, nausea and lack of appetite, chest pain or pressure. With mild heart failure, you may have few symptoms or become tired or out of breath only with exertion. As the disease worsens, symptoms may develop while doing everyday activities. Eventually, symptoms may occur even at rest. So now let's learn more about synergistic drug combinations. With many other health conditions, healthcare professionals prescribe just one or two medications, adding more as needed. However, for people with reduced ejection fraction, healthcare professionals have discovered that more medicines are more effective than fewer. Because the medications treat different aspects of heart failure, they work together with fantastic synergy, says Dr. Franz. That synergy has many effects, including preventing the progression of heart failure, improving quality of life, reducing symptoms such as shortness of breath, lowering the risk of hospitalization, and improving longevity. For example, an analysis of data from 49 clinical trials found that people with reduced ejection fraction who took four medicines experienced a reduced risk of premature death and hospitalizations compared with those who took fewer medicines. Other research indicates that this quadruple drug approach can increase a person's lifespan by an additional 6 years compared with the treatment with only two medicines. As we prescribe one drug and then two and then three and then four, the outcomes just keep getting better. Ejection fraction improves. Shortness of breath gets much better, says Dr. Franz. We're excited that we have medications that can turn a potentially fatal disease with poor quality of life into a disease that is still chronic but can be managed very effectively. However, treating heart failure is like fine-tuning an old carburetor, said Dr. Franz. If you don't keep tinkering with it, you don't keep it running properly, he said. For that reason, it's essential to work closely with your healthcare team, keeping the team up to date on how you are feeling. With this information, your prescriptions can be adjusted until you feel better. Make sure to tell your healthcare team if you experience worsening or unresolved heart failure symptoms, potential medication side effects, or barriers to taking medication as prescribed. Now I'm going to share a chart from this article that explains the four categories of heart failure medications. Healthcare professionals often recommend four different groups of medicines that work together to treat heart failure. Each person may need a slightly different set of medicines. In addition, your healthcare team may prescribe medicines or therapies not included in the list. So, there are, as I said, there are four categories, four groups. In group one, we have angiotensin-converting enzyme or ACE inhibitors. Examples of this are enalapril, known as Vasotec, lisinopril, known as Zestril. These relax blood vessels, lower blood pressure, and decrease strain on the heart. A second group of medicines within group one are angiotensin II receptor blockers, or ARBs. These include losartan, or Cozaar, or valsartan, known as Diovan. These work by relaxing blood vessels, lowering blood pressure, and decreasing strain on the heart. And the third category of medicines within group one are angiotensin receptor neprilysin inhibitors, known as ARNIs. These include sacubitril and valsartan, known as Entresto. These combine valsartan and sacubitril, which prevents breakdown of proteins that are beneficial for the heart and help the kidneys get rid of excess fluid. So that's group one. Group two is known as beta blockers. These include bisoprolol, carvedilol, are known as Coreg, and metoprolol, known as Toprol XL or Lopressor. These drugs slow heart rate, reduce blood pressure, limit heart damage, and strengthen the heart's pumping ability. Group three are called aldosterone agonists. These include eplerenone, known as Inspira, finerenone, known as Kerendia, and spironolactone, known as Aldactone. These work by blocking hormones that damage the heart and helping remove excess fluid. And the last group, as part of this cocktail of drugs, are sodium glucose cotransporter 2, or SGL2, inhibitors. These include canagliflozin, or Invokana, dapagliflozin, known as Farxiga, and empagliflozin, known as Jardiance. These drugs protect kidney function and help remove excess fluid. Those are quite a mouthful, but worth knowing about if, as Dr. Franz says, the combination of these can reduce or can increase a person's lifespan by an additional 6 years. So let's now turn to other advanced methods for heart failure. The first of these is LVAD. Healthcare professionals classify heart failure into four stages, A through D. People are diagnosed with advanced heart failure, called stage D, if their symptoms are severe, potentially resulting in multiple hospitalizations, and do not seem to improve much with usual treatment. In the past, unless they received a heart transplant, people in this stage of heart failure generally lived less than a year. However, the development of the left ventricular assist devices, or LVADs, has changed that prognosis. These implantable devices do what the name implies. They assist the heart in delivering blood to the rest of the body. LVADs have been around since the 1990s. While early versions of these devices led to health complications, the latest devices can work quite well. Today's devices are more durable, gentler on the body, and safer to implant. Due to these improvements, people can now live with an implanted LVAD for many years rather than just months. The devices are now an option for people who are not eligible to receive a heart transplant. In these situations, people use an LVAD for the rest of their lives. Today's LVADs require open-heart surgery to place. A power cable connects the implanted device to an external power source, either a wall outlet, when available, or battery packs when someone is away from electrical sources. We also have advances in home monitoring. To optimize heart failure treatment, you can combine visits to your healthcare team with monitoring at home between visits. The following devices can help empower you in maintaining your health. First, there are smart wearables. Smartwatches, wristbands, and rings use electrical sensors to detect and alert the wearer to irregular or unusual heart rhythms. These readings can then be shared with a healthcare professional. There are personal electrocardiogram devices. Similar to smart wearables, a small handheld device such as CardioMobile can be purchased for personal use at home. You press your fingers against the sensors to record an electrocardiogram, known as an ECG or EKG. This allows the device to alert you to irregular heartbeats. And, of course, there are home blood pressure monitors. Affordable upper arm cuff monitors allow you to take many more readings than you otherwise would get from office visits alone. This can help you and your healthcare team get a more complete picture of your blood pressure trends over time and guide adjustments to your heart failure medications. Last, there are smart scales. In addition to displaying your weight in real time, these scales use Wi-Fi signatures to sync with your phone, recording your readings over time. By looking at your body weight trends, you'll be able to see whether you are quickly gaining weight, which is a sign that your body might be storing extra fluid. Keep in mind that home monitoring does not replace in-office testing. However, by tracking and sharing this type of health data with your team, you'll be more likely to receive timely in-office testing when needed. Additionally, you and your care team will get a better understanding of your health over time. And yes, AI, or artificial intelligence, has come into this world as well. When someone has an ECG, sticky patches called electrodes are attached to the chest. Wires connect the patches to a computer, and the results are shown in waves. The waves reflect the signals that travel through the heart with each heartbeat. At Mayo Clinic, cardiac specialists use an AI algorithm when interpreting these ECG results. The AI-powered program can detect patterns in those waves that cannot be spotted with the human eye, helping to diagnose heart failure earlier in disease and with greater accuracy. Specifically, the AI program can detect heart failure with low ejection fraction during its earliest stages when symptoms may not yet be present. When left untreated, the heart failure worsens, making it more challenging to treat. In addition, AI can pick up on patterns that may help healthcare teams diagnose one cause of heart failure, amyloidosis, earlier. Cardiac amyloidosis can thicken the heart wall, making it harder for the heart to fill with blood between heartbeats. Heart failure caused by amyloidosis is treated differently than heart failure caused by blocked blood vessels or high blood pressure. Amyloidosis can mimic other conditions and can go undiagnosed for years, says Dr. Frantz. Early diagnosis is critical. While amyloidosis isn't curable, it's treatable with therapies that can dramatically reduce the effect of amyloid on the heart and slow or stop disease progression. Thanks to recent medical advances, heart failure doesn't have to permanently disrupt your life. Lifestyle changes, medications, treatments, and rehabilitation can help stabilize and improve symptoms while stalling further heart-related problems. That concludes the special issue on heart failure. I hope you found it valuable. I know I learned a lot. You know, one of the lifestyle choices that they suggested in that article is healthy eating. And that can improve not only our heart, but our digestion and brain and overall health. So this article is entitled, Eat the Rainbow. Many health organizations recommend eating 5 servings of fruit and vegetables daily. But why 5? According to one analysis, people who consumed 5 servings of fruit and vegetables daily experienced a 13% lower risk of death from all causes over the 30-year study compared with people who ate 2 servings a day. Other research highlights the benefits of reaching a 5-a-day goal by choosing a variety of bright-colored plant foods. One study found that people who consumed more than 30 different plant foods a week had greater gut biome microbiome diversity, a predictor of improved health, than did people who consumed fewer than 10. This finding included all plant foods, beans, nuts, seeds, coffee, tea, whole grains, herbs, and spices, as well as fruits and vegetables. The different colors found in plant foods provide powerful phytochemicals and other nutrients that can boost your immune system, protect your heart, and decrease your risk of a wide range of diseases, says Tara Schmidt, a lead dietitian with Mayo Clinic Diet. Phytochemicals also give foods their distinct aroma and taste. Although legumes, nuts, spices, coffee, and tea count toward your daily servings and can improve health, also aim for 5 different colored fruits and vegetables daily. If 5 a day seems out of reach, try to increase your daily consumption by 1 additional serving. Once that feels easy, add another, says Schmidt. To do so, look for opportunities to sneak brightly colored produce into the meals you already eat. So, here are some ideas for inspiration. At breakfast, you could create a yogurt parfait with blue, black, and red berries, or top cereal with chopped fruit. Pureed greens, cauliflower, avocado, and berries can be mixed into smoothies. Mix chopped onions, bell peppers, mushrooms, and greens into omelets. Use sliced radishes or red cabbage as a crunchy topping for avocado toast. Or sweeten oatmeal with berries or cherries. You might even top toast with peanut butter and sliced bananas or strawberries. For lunch, consider serving tuna or chicken over a mixed green salad. Or add diced celery, onions, and apples to a tuna or chicken salad. Tuck sliced tomato, greens, or shredded cabbage into sandwiches. Include an apple, radish, baby carrots, or bell peppers as a side dish. Try a soup made from sweet potato or tomato puree, or add cucumbers, avocado, or shredded carrots to a wrap. For dinner, you might include a small salad with most meals. Roast sliced onions and bell peppers as a taco topping. Add diced zucchini or mushrooms to dishes with ground meat or pasta. Build a bowl with edamame, rice, cucumber, avocado, and salmon. Add diced kale, tomatoes, or spinach to rice-based sides. Grill or toast kebabs with onions, peppers, mushrooms, and protein. Or swap zoodles, spiralized zucchini, for pasta, or mix the two together. So let's look at the different colors and what their nutrients and health effects might be. So start with red. That includes tomatoes, beets, radishes, cherries, strawberries, red onions, and red peppers. These contain lycopene, which may improve heart health, decrease prostate and breast cancer risk, and contribute to stroke prevention and improve brain function. Then there are yellow and orange foods. These include carrots, winter squash, apricots, yellow peppers, sweet potatoes, bananas, pineapple, mangoes, pumpkins, peaches, and oranges. These are carotenoids, and they may reduce the risk of heart disease and inflammation, strengthen the immune system, and build healthy skin and improve vision. Next, there are green foods. These include spinach, arugula, broccoli, Brussels, avocados, kiwis, green tea, asparagus, fresh green herbs, kale, and artichokes. These contain indoles and isothiocyanates. These may reduce inflammation and protect cells from damage, which helps prevent cancer. Then there's white and brown. That includes onions, mushrooms, cauliflower, garlic, and leeks. These contain flavonoids and allicin. They may help prevent tumor formation, reduce cholesterol and blood pressure, improve bone strength, and decrease the risk of stomach cancer. Lastly, we have blue and purple. Blueberries, blackberries, eggplant, figs, purple cabbage, Concord grapes, plums. These include anthocyanins and antioxidants linked to improve brain health and memory, and may lower blood pressure, reduce the risk of stroke and heart disease. I don't know about you, but I'm getting hungry just reading about these, and it seems like a really yummy way to better health. Here's another article from the Mayo Clinic Health Newsletter that might fall under the category of medical surprise. It's entitled, Diabetes Drug May Improve Pain and Function with Knee Osteoarthritis. If you have prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, there's a good chance you've been prescribed a drug called metformin, also known as Glumetza. Metformin does a good job of keeping blood sugar levels in check and can help promote modest weight loss. The drug generally is well tolerated and available. Additional benefits of taking metformin have emerged over the years. A recent study in JAMA highlights one of them: improvement in knee pain and function in people with knee osteoarthritis, also known as degenerative or age-related arthritis. Knee osteoarthritis occurs when the firm, slippery cartilage that lines the ends of the bones in the knee joint deteriorates, often causing knee pain and diminished function. Fortunately, the progression of this arthritis typically is gradual, so most people have time to take steps that can help ease pain and increase or preserve knee function. Options for this may include physical therapy, weight loss, exercise, and careful use of pain medications. These steps also can possibly delay the need for knee replacement. The JAMA study suggests that metformin may be another option to help. The study followed about 100 people in Australia who were overweight and had knee osteoarthritis that had been causing symptoms for at least 6 months. About half the people were randomly assigned to take 2,000 milligrams of metformin daily. The other half took an inactive substance, also called a placebo. At 3 months of follow-up, there was no difference in knee pain or function assessments between the two groups. But at 6 months, the metformin group had moderately lower pain scores and improved function scores compared with the placebo group. There was slightly more improvement in symptoms than is typical with anti-inflammatory and pain medications taken over 6 to 12 weeks. This isn't the first study to suggest that metformin may improve knee osteoarthritis symptoms, as metformin is known to have anti-inflammatory and possibly pain-reducing effects. In addition, the modest weight loss linked to metformin also potentially improves arthritis pain. The study was small and had only a short follow-up period, but its double-blind and randomized design offers more and better evidence for the effect of metformin on knee osteoarthritis. Mayo Clinic experts say that the study isn't large or conclusive enough to warrant prescribing metformin solely for knee osteoarthritis. However, the symptom relief it may provide is one more potential benefit for people with prediabetes or type 2 diabetes who are considering or already take this effective, low-cost drug. Now let's turn to a question that was submitted to the Mayo Clinic News Health Newsletter editorial board, and it deals with another of those diabetes drugs. The question, my doctor says I don't have diabetes yet, but I am at risk of developing it. Would Ozempic be a good option for me? The answer, Ozempic and other similar drugs are approved to treat type 2 diabetes and obesity. If you have prediabetes, meaning your blood sugar levels are elevated, but you don't have type 2 diabetes, your question is a little harder to answer. Whenever you eat, your blood sugar rises and triggers your pancreas to release insulin. Insulin carries the sugar in your blood into your cells, lowering the amount of sugar in the bloodstream. But when you have pre-diabetes, this process doesn't work well. Semaglutide, known as Ozempic or Wegovy or Rybelsus, is one of several drugs that work by mimicking the action of a hormone called glucagon-like peptide 1 in the body. These drugs, called GLP-1 agonists, help your body release more insulin in response to food. Similar drugs include dulaglutide, known as Trulicity, liraglutide, known as Victoza and others, and tirzepatide, known as Mounjaro or Zepbound, which also work on another hormone. These drugs are another tool for people who've already changed their lifestyle and tried other medicines, yet their blood sugar remains elevated. In people with obesity, these medicines also tend to cause weight loss. A recent study found that people with prediabetes and obesity who took tirzepatide for more than 3 years were less likely to develop type 2 diabetes than were those who took a placebo. However, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has not approved GLP-1 drugs to treat prediabetes. The high cost of these drugs can be a concern, and most insurance companies won't cover them to treat just that condition, with the potential exception of people who have both prediabetes and obesity. There are also potential side effects and needed precautions with these medications, and the risks may outweigh the benefits for some. The American Diabetes Association recommends making lifestyle changes as the first and most effective step in stopping prediabetes from progressing to diabetes. Changing your diet, getting more physical activity, and losing weight can help. If those steps don't bring your blood sugar levels under control, talk with your healthcare team about medication options. In that vein, here's an article, a brief one, that talks about competition, not price controls, causing slash GLP-1 prices. Novo Nordisk just announced price cuts for Ozempic and Wegovy, whose list prices as recently as last year were $1,000 a month. Patients buying directly from the manufacturer will be able to pay as little as $349 for a monthly dose of these medicines. The company also dropped prices for new direct pay customers to just $199 for the first 2 months. Good news. Well, that's all for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next week, and I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Deborah Love, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. The number again is 919-832-5138.